Hi, y'all. We are back for another episode today. I might sound a little funny because I am under the weather, but this was too exciting not to just get recorded. And we actually have a tight timeline with the release because I have Amber Arrington here today, and she is the founder of Autism Savvy, and she has the Autism Savvy Summit coming up. So we're going to talk about what resources that can provide you. This is going to be particularly true if you're pretty new to navigating the autism parenting journey, which I know many of you are because you're always looking for resources. Amber is a mom and actually has three autistic kids. So we're going to talk about that today, tell you a little bit about the summit, as well as her new book coming out.
Welcome to a parenting space actually designed for you, where you can get answers about navigating a life that includes autism. I'm Dr. Tay, a licensed child psychologist and parental coach specializing in neurodivergent affirming care. I have supported hundreds of autistic children and their families and have been in the autism field for over a decade. And I know firsthand the impact autism can have. I was 12 years old when my little brother was diagnosed, and my family had to learn how to navigate the autism journey. It wasn't always easy. Two decades later, I now create resources and services I wish my family had, including this podcast. And I developed the whole family approach. On this podcast, of course, we will talk about autism, but we will also talk about your personal growth and well-being as a parent, supporting your non-autistic children, and sharing personal stories of other families so you know you're not alone. Quick disclaimer before we jump into today's episode. Anything shared on this podcast should not be considered clinical advice, and you should consult with your team of medical, mental health, and developmental providers if you need support.
Amber, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you, Taylor. I'm so excited to be here with you as well.
Yeah. So kick us off. I gave you a brief intro, but kick us off and tell us a little bit about, like yourself and your autism parenting journey.
Okay, I would love to. So again, my name is Amber, and I am a mother to six kids, three of whom are autistic. But the unique part of our journey is my autistic kiddos span the gamut of decades. So yeah. I have a 20-year-old autistic son, and then my surprise babies that took me 20 years to have, they're now 3.5 and 5. My little girls, they both also received diagnosis of autism.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've just been living this support needs journey for a while, and I've learned a lot along the way, and that's what's taken me to where I am now, trying to help other parents also navigating an autism diagnosis for their child.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I'm really interested to hear about each of the diagnostic processes, because I'm sure when your oldest got diagnosed, it was a very different world of what we thought about autism, what resources were available. And it's interesting too, I think, just to highlight this part, is we do know that if you have one autistic child, the likelihood of having another is about a 1 in 5 chance. But for your family, your oldest kids are adopted. And so it's just, there was something where, I don't know exactly I feel like you were meant to do this in some ways, and I know it's hard and it's not always easy, but I love what you've done. And it's really interesting too, because I feel like we talk a lot about getting to this place of acceptance, but I recently heard this and I wish I remember whose model it was, because it was so profound talking to a parent about this. But the final level of this like model is that once you've accepted it, that you start helping and supporting others. And I feel like what's so cool is that is a huge part of your journey.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it does take coming to a place of acceptance, because what you resist persists. And as long as we're fighting and we're resisting against what is, we stay stuck. And so when we accept, we make peace. And then a lot of us do end up moving forward to help other people in the same situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So how old was your oldest when he got diagnosed?
So we're going to talk about Tyson first, my 20-year-old. And it was quite a journey piecing all of his diagnoses together. Essentially, I knew something was off by the time he was between 2 and 3. Okay. But every time I'd take him to get tested, he would come back quote unquote, like normal, or, oh no, he's testing. I take him to the school district, or I take him to be evaluated somewhere. And we just weren't hitting it. So like at first he received the diagnosis for anxiety when he, by age four, I think we were kind of trying to deal with anxiety. And it wasn't until age 10 that we have an educational diagnosis for autism. And that was with me pushing. And it wasn't until age 12 that we had the medical diagnosis for autism combined with learning disabilities and ADHD and this whole cocktail of things he was wrestling with. And it took me 12 years to piece it together.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting to think about what autism awareness was back then. We often thought of these very like stereotypical presentations. We weren't thinking a lot about, I say we, I wasn't in the field, but co-occurring diagnoses, things like that. And so my brother is 24. He did end up getting diagnosed at 23 months of age. I think it was, rare. But I also think my mom, similar to you, was such an advocate. But then she also was centered around the right people who would finally listen. And sometimes there's an element of luck, I think, in all of this as well. But yeah, it was a very different landscape than it was, than it is now. And we still have a lot of room to go and to improve with things.
Yeah. I look back on raising my son. And so we're talking 15, 20 years ago that all this was happening. And I think if I had him now, he would have had an autism diagnosis by age three. But it was tricky because he did hit his developmental milestones. Yeah. But then there were things like he didn't make connections with peers. He didn't have interest in playing with what would be considered typical toys. Like he likes sticks. But his ADHD presented first. And once we got that kind of under control, up rose those autism type symptoms, I guess you would say. So yeah, it was different then. And we're really lucky to have come where we are these days to know a lot more.
Yeah.
And get things in place.
It was different, but then also like on the ADHD front, they've done recent research to show that kids that get an ADHD diagnosis, it actually delays their autism diagnosis because it's so easy to be like, oh, it's just the inattention or the hyperactivity, impulsivity. We know that there are also social difficulties or social differences with ADHD as well. And so a lot gets attributed to the ADHD in this process. So yeah.
I did not know that. That makes so much sense then. That makes all the sense.
Yep. Yeah. And I think anxiety can be the same way as well. If that's the thing that presents, it's of course they don't want to leave the house and go socialize, or like with the anxiety front, or of course they're having difficulty making friends because they're too active for their friends. They can't sit down and play with their friends. There's all these kind of explanations of the autistic traits.
Yeah, that does make so much sense.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, did you know anything about Tyson's family history? Was autism in the family, or do you not have that information with him being adopted?
That's a good question. I have stayed connected with his birth mom. I am to this day. We're friends and we've always stayed in touch. But at the time, no, I didn't know of any autism, but his birth mom has many kids.
Okay.
And at this point she has several kids and a few of them are autistic. Hmm. Yeah. So not including him. So that makes, so yeah, right. that is super, but also different dads.
Yeah.
But she's not autistic. So right. It's very confusing.
It is, but there's also something, I feel like we hear about it a little less right now, but it's called the autism broader phenotype that has been studied in the research literature as well to talk about like parents basically who are carriers of the genes, but don't have the full presentation of autism. And it's interesting because it was really the kind of hot topic in the autism field and autism research for quite a while and it makes sense. There's different things with, I won't go into all of it, but with epigenetics where genes can get turned on and off. But I also think sometimes we think of the broader autism phenotype as people that just haven't been diagnosed and identified as autistic as well. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So then he's 12, you're navigating things. Talk a little bit about what services looked like back then as you were trying to navigate all of this.
So interesting because I didn't know about ABA really back then. Like I had heard the term, I didn't know what it really meant. So we weren't doing any of that. and he maybe did a little OT, but he presented as so quote unquote high functioning that I feel like he didn't get the attention he deserved. I think he had a little bit of speech and a little bit of OT, like through the school setting.
Yeah.
But no ABA. And then the type of services I got for him became more of therapy. We tried horse therapy, like life skills type groups and mental health, case management for medication, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
But he did not get approved for ABA till he was 16. Yeah. Like a referral had gone in, but then they would have to do a functional behavior assessment, right? Yep. First, and dealing with the state and the backlog and how long that takes to get approved took forever. By the time we got him approved for ABA at age 16, they didn't even know what to do with him. And I didn't know what to tell them to do with him.
Right.
But like you said, I might be skipping ahead by saying this, but advocating for Tyson all of those years definitely queued me up to know how to dive right in down the road when more kiddos came along that had support needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing with Tyson, like how would you describe his support needs currently? And then also what are some of his strengths that you see currently as well?
Okay. Tyson, I will talk about this because I want to talk more openly about this for people. I feel like a lot of it is taboo. When he approached aged 18, we did apply for guardianship for him.
Okay.
So we have guardianship of him. He's 20 now. So that's been for a couple of years. And also we have him in a habilitation group home. Mm-hmm. And that was something that we wanted. It's something that he wanted. It's something our family was ready for and he was ready for. And even though he was diagnosed, quote unquote, level one, high functioning, low needs, this is actually where he landed. For him, he seemed to stall out around age 10 to 12 in his development.
Okay.
And he needed a lot more support to the point where we did ultimately arrive at, we'll get guardianship if we can of him and then we'll help him. And then I only became comfortable with the group home thing. It took me years to become comfortable with that. But because I had a client that actually ran several group homes in my state for men with disabilities.
Oh.
So over the years, I would be asking her questions about it. I was able to tour it. And I actually ended up placing him in one of her homes. Oh. That made it an easier choice. And it's been a wonderful decision for our family and for him. I would say he is happy. He wouldn't want to come back home. Do I say he's thriving now? Is he out getting married, getting a job, going to college, paying for his own apartment? No, not that kind of thriving, but he's feeling like he's a little bit independent. He's not under our thumb. We just got approved for vocational rehab. He did. And I'm working on that for him to get him back into school and or a job. So it's just, this is where we are at.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
It is. And I think it's such an important conversation too, because I hear from so many parents of worry about the future, what's going to happen once they're out of school. And I think knowing that this is a path to explore and figure out, is it a good fit for your family or not, can be a really helpful step. And to be candid, the sad reality is there are not as good of services for autistic adults as there are autistic kids. Yeah. And some of you might be listening and going, there's not good services for autistic kids either.
Right.
But knowing that something like this could be an option to explore.
I'm so glad to be talking about it because, and I feel like the average parent of an autistic kiddo, and especially one that's maybe would be level three, non-speaking, they're just going to plan on that kiddo living with them forever.
Yeah.
I also think a lot of people in my position plan on their kid living with them forever. And if that works for your family, then do it. But sometimes we have to untether. I recently learned that term from somebody else, but I think that's okay to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So then you have one autistic kid at this point, and then you ended up having two girls, like your surprise babies. What age did your oldest of those two girls then end up going through this process? And what did that look like?
Yeah. So we did IVF several times, and the time it finally worked is the batch where I got my babies from.
Yeah.
So growing our family there was no easy piece of any of that in 20-year time span. But so then Mallory comes along and she was showing signs for a while, but I finally noticed maybe around 26 months where I'm going, okay, there is something here. And lucky for us, like within 6 weeks, she had a diagnosis.
Okay. Wow. And at this point you have four kids to compare her to know that something is deviating from what, because I think sometimes it's hard to notice traits that young.
It is hard to notice. And you know what? I was missing it because my next oldest kid was 11 years older than her.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a baby in a long time. You just expect them to develop typically.
Yeah.
And then even though I had Tyson, it took me 12 years to piece it all together. So I really didn't know. Plus, she turned one in January of 2020. We all know what happened in March.
Okay.
I also got pregnant again in January. So I'm pregnant that whole year. It's COVID. We're inside. I hadn't had a baby for a long time and we can't go anywhere.
Right.
And so we're not going to grocery stores. We're not going to parks. And I'm missing it as it's all between age one and age two. I'm missing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wish I knew the milestones. I wish I would have been looking closer because I feel like I would have, there's so much we can do to work with them and grow that communication in that language. And the sooner you catch it, if you knew, I just wish I knew. I could have done a lot more.
Yeah, but I also just want to normalize too that 26 months is really young for you to catch it too. But I think I love that you articulated that because I hear this from parents time and time again, you describing, like you saying what you just said, like parents describe that all the time to me. Oh, but looking back, I see X, Y, and Z. And it's, hindsight makes it so much easier to be able to put the frame of, oh, there were these indicators. But at the time, it's this analogy of wearing what colored glasses you're wearing, right? And so if you're just wearing glasses that are one color and you're assuming your kid's going to be neurotypical, there's cognitive bias in that of like you're looking for that evidence versus once that light switch goes on of, okay, there could be some concerns. It's so much easier at that point to start to notice those because then our brain is primed to that. And that's literal human neuroscience. It's the reticular activating system. It's like when you want a new car and then you see it everywhere. That's what it is, where our brain is primed to see the data to support that piece.
That makes a lot of sense. And you're right. We should normalize, like most people aren't looking for the stuff. Like we're just not. And for me, I was like 20 years. I wait for this miracle baby. First time I was ever pregnant. Okay. 20 years into my marriage. And I'm not expecting this. No, I was going to ride into the sunset now because I work so hard to be able to enjoy this moment. But by the way, I still am sailing into the sunset with her, just in a different way. But that's what I thought at the time.
Absolutely. And that's some of the grieving process that you have to go through. Do you feel like you had one autistic kid already? Do you feel like you went through that same emotional process and journey when she got diagnosed?
Real quick, just a brief interruption, because I want you to know you don't have to navigate this journey alone. If you're in a place where you have concerns about your child's development, you've been on the search for a therapist that provides evidence-informed neurodivergent affirming care, or you're needing more support as a parent, the whole family approach may be a good fit for you. Autism doesn't just impact your child's life, so you deserve care that works for your child and your whole family. Head to the link in the show notes to schedule a complimentary call where we can chat about your unique circumstances. We can help you decide if Dr. Tay Concierge Clinical Care would be a good fit for your family. And if not, we will provide you resources for your next best steps.
Here's my truth. I was relieved to finally have a diagnosis in place for Tyson and to have a term to lean into and know how to work to support him. But I barely knew anything then. Still, I was relieved when it came. And let me back up. Raising my older son was so challenging. Hard to admit, but I just like to try to be open so that other people can feel like it's okay to feel those things. It was freaking hard raising him. And I associated hard with autism. Mm-hmm. So when Mallory receives a diagnosis, I'm like, what? I can't do this again.
Yeah.
So I was sad. I was grieving, but I also was so busy in action to hurry and try to fix it and make her neurotypical as fast as I could, that I didn't lean into the grieving very much. But I did start losing my hair, and the body told the real story.
And that is not uncommon either, of parents going into that fix it mode of, we just got to take action. There's not space for my emotions in this, and it will catch up in some ways. When I think that's one of the reasons, and I know you and I have had conversations about this, that I have conversations up front when kids are diagnosed about that, the emotions that are normal. Because some of it too is, it's easy if you do feel the emotions then to shame yourself for feeling emotions, like you're selfish. I don't know if you ever experienced this. Turn it off. I shouldn't be worried about myself. It's selfish to think about me. I need to focus on Mallory. And it's, no, you're human. And this is part of that human journey that all of us have to go through.
Yeah. And we do, we have to feel it. I feel like that, like there's two sides to me now where I want parents to not judge their feelings, let all feelings be normal, because, and I always say this, it's no wonder that maybe you fear autism, given the narrative that the world has painted about it for the last many years. Okay. So that's fine. That's normal. And also, if we knew, if we got to have Dr. Tay as our diagnosing psychologist and then leave with you and our plan of action for our child and our understanding of neurodiversity in place, like, we probably wouldn't feel that sad.
Right.
So that's why I love you so much. And I always tell you that. I just think that if everybody had a you at diagnosis, then there would be a lot less fear around autism. But also, it's okay to feel what you feel.
It is. Right. That's the thing. Both things can be true, right? It's the power of and. They're not mutually exclusive. And I think I love the narrative around neurodiversity so much. And I haven't always, I will say I've always been on the side of helping parents navigate their emotions and like supporting them and slowing down and doing more, I don't know, handholding through the process, because that was important for me because of my history and my background. But it wasn't until more recently that neurodiversity came into this. But I think sometimes I love neurodiversity and I loudly talk about it and I listen to autistic voices. And that's the thing, is sometimes I think it can make parents feel like you just have to be at that acceptance piece right here and right now at the time of diagnosis. A lot of these parents that are talking about neurodiversity, or even autistic adults that are talking about neurodiversity, it was a journey to get there. And so you have to make sure not to compare your point A to their point like Y or Z.
That makes so much sense. I think you're right about that. So when the baby came along, I was grateful to have the diagnosis for Tyson. I was really sad when I had the diagnosis at first for Mallory. So how Kennedy gets her diagnosis is this. Mallory's going to an ABA-based community preschool where it's basically half autistic kids, half typical peers is what it's supposed to be. And so all along, Mallory's RBTs are like, I hope you put Kennedy in our class. We can't wait to have Kennedy, because they were used to being around baby Kennedy when Mallory is getting her therapies. She couldn't enter till 18 months. And I go to get her assessed so she can go in as a typically developing peer. Now, of course, I'm watching her milestones like a hawk. I have a whole notes app on her hitting her milestones, clapping, pointing, waving, saying mom and dad. Okay, about 16 months, she starts toe walking. And I'm going, oh. Like, also my oldest daughter toe walked, but she's neurotypical. Okay, we'll keep an eye on this. We go to the pediatrician for the 18-month exam. I'm like, hey, she's toe walking. Do you think maybe this is the beginnings of a regression? I don't know how that works. What do you think? She was a great talker. And she's talking more than some of my two-year-olds. I'm not worried about her.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, phew. Okay, a couple weeks later, I go in for this assessment so that she can go in as a typically developing peer with Mallory at their school. And I didn't realize I was walking into the ADOS, right? So the ADOS is the assessment for autism, or a piece of it, where they are evaluating the kiddos with certain toys and expecting them to do certain things in certain ways. I didn't know that's what this, I thought I just signed the paperwork and she goes in as a typical peer because there's openings. No, it's a literal ADOS. And so we get in the room and they start going through it with her. And I gulped. And
did you recognize it as they were going through it with her because of Mallory's? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's very distinct activities.
Yes. Yeah. But I didn't know until we got there in the room that's what was happening.
Wow.
I was a little nervous, but she was hitting all her milestones, so I wasn't that nervous. Okay. We get to the end. So Kennedy's a different personality. I've talked to you about how I think she would fall in the PDA profile. Halfway through her assessment, she wants to leave. And she's not being very cooperative with the assessor. And anyway, we get to the end, they pull me in a room and they're like, she scored poorly on the ADOS. We think you should have her assessed for autism. Mm. And I was like, I have all her milestones right here. She's hitting them. And I thought I was like the big shot now who knew what to look for. And I wasn't going to be missing something again.
Yeah.
She wasn't as responsive to her name with them. She maybe wasn't engaging with them, and she played with her toys as much as she could. So we decided to do it one more time. We went home over the weekend because she was tired. They're like, let's try it again on Monday. Over the weekend, I'm taking videos. I'm really watching. I'm like, okay, maybe she is starting to make less eye contact. Like maybe we're regressing. I don't know.
Yeah.
We go back. She goes through the ADOS again. They're like, she scored even worse. We think you should have her officially assessed for autism. And so I did. And like a week later, on April 29th, the exact to the day, 1 year from when Mallory was diagnosed, April 29th, the next year, Kennedy is diagnosed with autism. Weird, right?
Yeah. Also weird that there's confetti.
Yeah, I saw that.
On Zoom, it's like an apples-like thing. Like not on time for confetti. Wow, that's crazy. Like just that the day was the exact same. How were you? Okay. I won't lie. I knew some of this story from chatting with you, but I didn't realize you were going in not realizing that they were doing the ADOS. Like,
yeah,
I don't love that.
I know.
Not informed consent, right? For you to say, I'm okay this being done, knowing that there could be this outcome that I'm not expecting. So what was this process like for you?
I was gut punched for a minute. But ever since she started toe walking and I would talk to my husband, he would be like, Amber, if she's autistic, we know exactly what to do. It's fine. And I was like, okay, all right, you're right. You're right. So when this happened, I've shared with you, I felt like I could make a case either way for, I don't really think she is autistic versus maybe she's at the beginnings of some regression, whatever. I'm just going to go with the diagnosis because I know what kind of support she's going to get. And I didn't think any of that would be harmful.
Yeah.
So I leaned into it real fast because now I have the same girls at the same ABA based preschool. Like I love the staff generally. It's a positive experience. Yeah. And she's been thriving there. Like she could be teaching their class now. I'm not kidding. They're having a hard time coming up with goals for her because she is doing so well.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm curious, have you mentioned PDA at all to them?
Yes. Thankfully the BCBA is very receptive. They're not really looking outside of the scope of where they're focused, I think a lot of times, but I've been like, yes, I've said, do you know about this? And she's been like, I will research this with you. And so I'll send her podcasts. I'll send her this one probably or whatever ones. I'll send her information to research PDA. So yeah, she's receptive to learning and approaching her in that way.
Yeah. Okay. So they're in this community preschool with ABA. What other services are they currently in?
Mallory was in speech therapy and occupational therapy. She graduated from speech therapy last year. Okay. She is now in feeding therapy with the occupational therapist and then ABA. And then Kennedy doesn't have anything except for going to the preschool. Wow. And honestly, they'll be done June of this year. And I don't know if we'll go back to ABA.
Okay.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't mind sharing, there's a lot of controversy right now in the field about ABA and whether or not to do it. I think it's important for parents to hear some of that thought process. So for you, especially too, you talked about with Mallory, there was this fix-it mode, and now you swung more to this neurodiversity perspective. So I guess twofold real quick, now that I'm thinking of it, when did that transition happen to more of a neurodiversity lens? And then, how did you decide to go this ABA route?
So this happens to so many moms, especially when they go get a diagnosis from a business that offers diagnosis, but also offers ABA services. Mm-hmm. Like they go from pediatrician referral to go get an autism diagnosis. Their child is diagnosed autistic and immediately they're just ushered to ABA.
Yeah.
They don't even think to ask questions. Neither did I. I left the psychologist with a packet of ABA providers. I'd heard ABA is the gold standard. We're going to do ABA. It's covered by insurance. I didn't even know it was controversial at the time. Right.
And probably with Mallory's age, that makes sense. Like, I feel like it's been a much more vocal narrative more recently.
And it's vocal on social media. It's not vocal in day-to-day living. That's a good point.
Yeah,
none of the moms are talking about it at drop-off and pickup at our ABA-based school. Yeah. So I didn't question it. I'll tell you when I started to change my tune. I wrote a book.
Yeah.
That is what changed my tune. While I was researching for this book that I wrote, I realized how much I didn't know that I didn't know about autism, about neurodiversity, about the debates, about all of it. And autistic adults' voices, same journey, sounds like that you've been on too with your practice. And I started to see a whole other side to this thing. Yeah. And it's been a beautiful thing. Okay, ABA is controversial, yes. I'm one of those that would say, like, we've had a beautiful experience with it. I feel like it's been so good for my girls and our family. And I secretly am very scared that I made a bad decision. And that it will catch up to them and I will have regretted it.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that's hard. But I think so many parents need to hear that again, you can give yourself permission to feel scared in this too and question things. And I think it's also important to remember the fact that you're thinking these thoughts, right, means that if something does happen, you're going to be equipped and ready to support your child in navigating that. I have no doubt about that, that if it starts to be, they're talking about that traumatic experience, you'll hop into action and get them a therapist to support them in processing all of this, which I think is really a powerful thing to remember.
That's all we can do. That is all we can do. We do the best with the information we have at the time, and we hope our kids can forgive us if we messed up or if we just missed the mark.
Yeah. Yeah. What's really interesting, so I'm very open about this, but I'm in therapy, and for so long going through this journey as a sibling, I just learned how to be the helper in all of it. My brother needed more help and support than I did, taking a back seat. But for so long too, I was hesitant to even process some of this because I have episodes on this, but I was so worried that by me admitting it, it would mean that my parents did a bad job, right? Mm. It was a very black and white thought pattern, which our brain likes to do so that it can predict. But that's the thing, like, they did the absolute best they could. And sometimes it's not enough. And I think that's true of the entire parenting journey. I remember too, one time asking my therapist, I'm like, so one day when I become a parent, am I going to constantly be thinking, like, what decisions am I going to make to mess up my kid? And she was like, that's the thing is, as parents, we all do make these mistakes. It's unavoidable. And that's because we're human and all we can do is our very best. And then what becomes really important is that repair on the back end.
I love that. Yeah. Because we can repair. And that must have been hard growing up as a sibling to an autistic brother. And I'm sure I'm doing that to my other kids. And they are getting the shaft because they're not the hottest fire most of the time.
Right.
So I totally get that.
But I always say that's where I love the conversations that have come around regarding neurodiversity and even helping siblings to understand what their neurotype is. And it might be that they're neurotypical, what their strengths are, what their support needs are, because we all have support needs at the end of the day. And it comes down to quality time versus quantity of time and attention.
Yeah, makes sense.
There's so many like little nuggets, I feel like, in this episode, and just you laying out your truth is truly powerful. How did you decide to then start Autism Savvy? I saw the other day you made a post about like you went from, oh, it's the whole trend going on social media right now, like what you don't know behind the scenes. And you went from a lucrative career into launching Autism Savvy. So walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a long time coming. Ever since I had Mallory, I started stepping down and down from my beauty business. But I don't know. My soul was looking for my next thing and what would feel. I did lashes and brows. That's fun. But also lashes and brows don't matter, really. I love the connections I had with people. And that's what mattered to me the most. But I was like, I need to do something that's more meaningful to me. And it was against my will. Like, it was step by step. It's a long story, but I did decide to just completely step away from services. I still have my education side of, we teach people how to do those services, but I just wanted to help where I felt like I could.
Yeah.
Because this is a big piece of my life now, and I've done it for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I love helping people, and it was just like a good fit.
Yeah.
Part of me was like, I don't want to like live autism day in and day out. I just want to live my life, as far as, because it can be really heavy and sad sometimes for people. That's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just walked into my calling that I never knew was my calling, I think. And here I am. So that's what I spend my full-time job. This is my hobby. This is my full-time job now.
I love it.
Autism Savvy.
When did it launch?
I started loosely at the end of last year, but like official January 2024.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that new. I remember finding your account on social media. It was on TikTok first, actually.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a lot of followers. You were just showing up, telling your truth. And like, now to see where it's grown and exploded. And then I think eventually I was like, oh, I should follow her on Instagram. And mm-hmm. I actually see more of your content now on Instagram. I personally spend more time on Instagram than TikTok. Yeah. So it's so cool to be able to watch and an account grow and just your passion behind it.
It was one of those on the business side of things. Like, social media was something, and with my other business, we did really well. Like, I sell courses, we're in beauty schools, like we sell courses online, the whole thing, but I never nurtured. I didn't do it organically. It was like through paid advertising mostly.
Okay.
So growing an account on social was not something I ever wanted to do, ever. But I don't know, at some point something switched and I was like, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do the one thing I don't want to do. I got to put myself out there. I've got to learn how to be good at it. I've got to learn to edit. I got to take the haters. I've got to develop thick skin. Yeah. And yeah, it's grown. It's going really well. And I'm grateful because that just means I get to connect with so many amazing people. Yeah. I get to help more people. And if that's what I have to do, that's a price I have to pay to get in front of people who I can help, then that's cool.
Yeah. I often think about it too. Yes, there is marketing. It's a marketing strategy with social media. And anyone that tells you it's not is lying to you. But at the same point, what I love about it is it's a form of free education too, mm-hmm. right? Our hope is to be able to work with people in a more intimate way, but not everyone's in a place where they are ready to do that, or they are financially able to do that. And so I think that is what becomes so cool, is still having this impact, even if they don't become officially part of the business.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah, you never know that one thing that you say one day that was the one thing someone needed to hear to just get them through that moment. And that's a beautiful thing, or the piece of education that does.
Yeah. And isn't that kind of what happened? Your account was growing pretty steadily, but then you talked about the emotion behind an autism diagnosis. Was that the reel that like skyrocketed your account?
I had a few that hit like really well, that resonated really well, but that's the most recent one. And people, wow, I didn't expect the response. That one, not because I made that post for the mom that day that she's going in for her child's autism diagnosis. Yeah. But what I didn't expect was how much it would resonate when every other mom in the world that saw it, to the tune of thousands, was like, oh my gosh, that was me 5 years ago. Oh my gosh, that was me 2 years ago. Oh my gosh, everybody remembers that moment.
Yeah.
And that just really resonated. I get it. I could still cry right now if I go back to that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk a little bit about what Autism Savvy does, and then you can also mention about the summit that is upcoming as well.
Yes. So Autism Savvy as a whole is just like the umbrella for education. Like, I have a blog I'm working on. We'll have a podcast coming out later this year, all the free content on social media, all the stuff. And the main thing that we offer inside of Autism Savvy at this point is the Infinity Mom Club. Like, it's the community. That's the hub for all the education, all the resources from a neutral source, like access to experts. It's not just a free Facebook group. It's not just a free Zoom hangout. Like, this is where you're going to come learn how to take action for your next best step for your autistic child. Particularly great for the mom brand spanking new to the journey.
Yeah.
Now, Autism Savvy is putting on the Autism Savvy Summit this month. And I'm so excited about that. And you're going to be a part of it. And I'm really excited about that. So the cool thing about this summit is it's the While You Wait edition. So we are working to help parents that are stuck waiting for diagnosis, stuck waiting for services, or maybe they just can't really access services at all. And we're bringing in 25 plus speakers to help parents know how they can work with their own child on so many different things, like at home while they're waiting.
Yeah. And I think that's so important because a lot of times that's not the information that's shared. Literally, I was in a Facebook community and this mom was asking about like different like approaches and all of that. And it was a PDA Facebook community. And I was like, yeah, those aren't ideal approaches for PDA. And the mom replied back to me, it was like, oh, but we don't have the diagnosis yet, meaning the diagnosis of autism. And I was like, that's okay. Like you still can do the same supports with low demand parenting or with gestalt language processing or sensory regulation, or I'm going to be talking about more the parental emotional journey and how you navigate this amidst a really hard season. And so there's so much that you can do.
Yeah, we don't want people out there feeling like not only are they dealing with this brand spanking new thing that they don't know anything about, but they don't know what to do with their child and for their child. They don't realize that they can still be the expert. They're waiting to maybe ever, maybe never access experts or have to wait months or years.
Yeah.
So I love the idea that we can empower ourselves to know how to start to support our child during that wait and beyond.
Yeah. I love it. I love it so much. And tell us a little bit about your book too, that is coming out and launching. When does that, or it is out, right?
No, April 1st. It comes out in a week.
Okay, I thought you told me April 1st, and obviously for those listening, this is airing after, but I've seen people do screenshots. Did they get like early access?
Oh yeah, because what happened was I put the audiobook is free inside the Infinity Mom Club. Then it will be for sale on Audible and through Amazon. But yes, people have already had access to the audio version. That's why you've maybe seen a little bit about it far, but it's called Not a Typical Motherhood, the guidebook for navigating a new autism diagnosis for your child. Oh. So it's that book that I wish that everybody could leave the psychologist or pediatrician or neurologist office with that book.
Yeah.
Go sit down and read it. Then go sign up with Dr. Tay in her small group coaching, and you're not going to be stressed out at all.
Yeah.
Like that is who that book is for. And so anyway, it's coming out in April.
Oh, I'm so excited to probably listen. I'm a big listener versus a reader. So listen to it. I'm really excited for that.
Good. You can have it whenever you want. You just say the word.
Okay. So what we'll do, we'll in the show notes, we'll put the link to register for the upcoming summit. Also where people can get your book as well. Where else though can people connect with you?
Just go to autismsavvy.com. That's the best spot. And then I'm at autismsavvy on Instagram and TikTok, but I spend most time on Instagram.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a bias, but I think it's so much better. I think there's more of I found it easier to grow there, and there's more of a community and something about the DM aspect too of Instagram. Like I'm constantly chatting with parents and I just find it a little bit easier than TikTok. I still TikTok, but yeah.
No, I am team Instagram now, but I was team TikTok and I never was on Instagram.
I know. Then, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Then you can't send a voice memo on yes. TikTok.
And we know we both love voice memos.
So. Yeah, we love voice memos.
We do. Amber, thank you so much for being here today and just sharing so transparently. Is there anything else before we wrap up that's like on your mind before we wrap the episode?
We covered a lot of ground today, but the biggest thing that I hope for any parent listening is, especially if they're brand spanking new to an autism diagnosis for their child, is life can still be so good. And you can't see it now, maybe. You just don't know what the future holds, and that is scary. Yeah. But there is so much to hope for.
I love that. What a perfect way to wrap up this episode. So thank you for being here. All right, y'all. That is a wrap for today's episode of Evolve with Dr. Tay. I will see you back here next time.
Before we wrap up this episode, for real this time, I want to share a couple ways you can get even more value and what your next steps could be. First, join the Evolve Facebook group. We do Q&As about the episodes and so much more. I linked that group, my personal social media pages, and any resources I mentioned in this episode in the show notes. So scroll down now and join me online. When you submit questions on any of my pages, your question could be featured on this podcast. How cool is that? I love being able to speak on topics that feel directly relevant to your life. Your questions truly make a difference in the content we create here. One last thing, do your fellow autism parents a favor. Share this episode on your social media and tag me. Autism currently affects 1 in 36 families in the United States and many more worldwide. So I'm sure there is a parent in your social media followers that could be served by this podcast. Thank you again for being here, and I'm so grateful we shared this time together. Bye, y'all.